Hello, and welcome to the Business Behind Small Business, the show that reminds you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. In each episode, we will discuss common issues small businesses face and offer tips and advice from the perspectives of two business owners, one that is built to sell and one that is built to inherit. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and Tiffany Kao. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it. COVID did more than shut the world down back in 2020. It exposed the deep disappointment of many employees and employers in their current job or company situation. A lot of people quit their jobs, companies shifted their focus, or changed completely, and a new term became trendy: quiet quitting. How can you measure the quality of your employees, making sure they are happy and likely to stay, that they are also making clients happy and likely to stay or come back, and do all of this while your company grows? Let's talk about measuring quality output from your employees. Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before and or after this podcast.
So I think it's logical to believe that hiring quality people is needed to achieve quality work. But honestly, that's just a start. As employers, we can't rest on our laurels and think that there's nothing else that needs to be done except to bring people on board that's already really good at what they do and then just pay them. In these days where people are job hopping, and now after COVID, which has brought forth to the forefront the inner needs of people who want to balance their life and their incomes, this is more important than ever that employers don't just stop and think that once they hire somebody and bring them on, their job is done. So in doing research for this subject, I came across an excellent piece of information that really summarized everything that I was just going to write and talk about. So hey, why not? And I think, Savannah, it will serve as also a famous example because the company I'm going to be talking about is Marriott.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I love it. Two birds, one stone. Yay. So this piece was actually written in the Harvard Business Review. And of course, the article will be in our show notes. And it was written by the executive VP of Marriott. And his name is G. Michael Hostage. And he was writing about the quality control in a service business, which of course means the employees of the business and how to actually build the quality control into the operations. So, as expected, one of the triggering events of why Michael was writing this piece in the Harvard Business Review was because a promising and up-and-coming, kind of youngish employee of Marriott suddenly quit. Now, this, of course, mystified all his bosses because this employee has always gotten excellent performance feedback. And like when I say excellent, I'm not even talking about like, hey, okay, you know, meets expectation. This guy was always getting job well done, you know, up for promotion, definitely leadership material, you know, along those lines. And of course, as any employer, once you find great talent and you train them, you do your hardest to actually retain them. So once he handed in his notice to quit, all his bosses were trying to tell him how much he was liked, how exceptional he was, and how there's definitely a very well-paid career in his future with increasing responsibilities at Marriott should he choose to stay. And of course, he held on to this decision and left and went to work for a competing company. Now, what I really liked about what Michael was writing was that he actually said that Marriott reached out to this employee 6 months after he left to ask him to provide constructive criticism of Marriott, which is amazing, I think.
I think it's interesting that they waited 6 months.
I guess maybe it's to see how the guy was doing over at the new job, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they, you know, internally discussed it and was thinking like, look, we really just need to ask because we can't seem to figure out ourselves why he decided to quit. And we don't want more people to leave like him. Mm-hmm. Now, the good thing is the employee actually did provide feedback. And then Marriott actually acted on the information they were receiving. And they wanted to address the pain points for their employees and decrease the rate of turnover so they can figure out how to keep all of them, you know, satisfied, challenged, and growing in their positions. And as a result of that, they ended up developing 8 programs internally to address and hopefully prevent good people from leaving in the future. Now, I will stress that it was actually 8 programs and not just 1. And the reason why there's 8 was because George writes, and I quote, "It takes a number of personnel programs to keep good people, partly because employee needs vary so widely, and partly because a variety of subjects, settings, and instructors often serve to reinforce a person's knowledge and understanding." So in other words, you kind of have to keep repeating it.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a living, breathing thing, right?
It's a living, breathing thing, and you have to come at it from different angles, right? One way of, Savannah, you and I were just talking about interpersonal communication.
Yeah.
Sometimes one way of saying things doesn't mean that it's going to be understood by, you know, all the people you're speaking to.
Yep.
So these 8 programs are like this. So the first one is, they call it individual development. So during the employee's first 2 to 3 months with the company, this program is set to teach them the technical knowledge and the skills to succeed in their role. It's focused on breaking down the information into digestible pieces and mixing both on-the-job training and classroom-like seminars. Now, personally, I think that onboarding is a very critical time in an employee's journey in any company. So usually it's like the first 90 days. This is where they really get to know what you do, how you do it, and where they fit in the bigger, you know, scheme of things. And then this is also for us as employers to really plant the seed for them to get excited about working for you and to get behind the mission of your company. So the second program they also developed was a management training program. So at Marriott, they require anyone in management to go through training of one of these management development sessions each year. So this is like a 2 to 3 day seminar that actually covers a wide variety of professional management topics. So at Marriott, what's interesting is that upper management is actually relatively young. The president, Bill Marriott Jr., is only 43 years old himself. So there isn't too much of a generational gap between kind of upper management and those below them on the org chart. But their training for management training still emphasizes communication skills. I figure, Savannah, you would appreciate that.
Yes.
You know, offering training seminars or training session topics that often speak to, quote unquote, the managing the now generation, which 30-year-old and 35-year-old middle managers learn how to deal with people who are much younger than them in a working environment. Again, personally, I think providing management training is so, so important and has a trickle-down effect in any business. Now, there has been more than one time, more than one company across a whole bunch of different industries, have I seen companies promote employees to a management position where they're actually in charge of managing people because, you know, the elevation of their, you know, growth in their career with the company was so important that they basically put them in a management position with no training of how to be an effective manager. So then these people are just left to figure it out on their own and on the job. Some succeed. And then others fail and then frustrate the hell out of the people they're managing.
Mm-hmm. And cause people to quit.
Correct. Now, I'm not sure why so many employers just assume that every person is built with the same inherent ability to manage people effectively if they simply bestow them the title of manager or supervisor or executive. Somehow they think that with the title, they'll just magically know how to deal with people in the way they need to as a manager. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we can say that is definitely not the case.
No.
All right. Program number 3 is manpower planning. I thought this one was kind of interesting. So this is where George says that the question is asked like this: how many and what kinds of people will be needed in the next 3 or 4 years to fill key company positions? So this program is actually about planning today for the talent that you're going to need down the road so that you can start nurturing them now, especially if they're kind of organically coming up through the company, so that they're ready to kind of advance into these positions when the time comes.
Ooh, that's smart.
That is genius. Mm-hmm. So I'll quote something he said about this program, which is, "The employee who knows how he or she is performing on a job and what his and her chances for more pay and responsibility is more likely to be a happy employee. Thus, a key element of good manpower planning is the periodic performance review of all management personnel. Our people know that these reviews of their work, attitudes, and potential are prerequisites for promotion, and it follows naturally that our better people look forward to them." Now, the key here is to keep things personal, as he says, so that executives and managers are only reviewing those who they actually have direct knowledge about. So probably no more than somebody who's two degrees from them or two levels below them. And if in your company, you don't have anybody internally that you can identify, somebody who can rise up in the future to a more advanced position, then now is the time to start asking when you need to start recruiting somebody from the outside so then you can, quote unquote, fast track them into the role. I think this program is a little brilliant, I have to say. No doubt why Marriott is around still.
Oh, yeah. And a great company to work for, by the way.
I hear they are, so.
Yeah, I know two people that work for Marriott. Well, one is my stepfather and another is my best friend's husband. One in a lower end position and one in a much higher end position. And both of them love their jobs. So
maybe this is the insight into why.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Program number four is the standard of performance. So this is where it is made clear what the expected productivity is of each person on the team. This should also be negotiated personally between the employee and their manager. So the question here to ask is, and I quote, exactly what is expected of me on the job in order for me to be rated at least a satisfactory performer? And he also stresses that this should be done in writing so that there is a point of reference and no mistake of an understanding of what is to be expected. One of the other things that George actually points out too is to pay attention to those who actually have very high touch points with your customers. Now, these may not be the usual high-skilled workers, right? At Marriott, these tend to be the bellhops. At Marriott, they actually have a booklet written for the bellhops stating what the company brand is, what is represented in the jobs of a bellhop, and then down to the details of how to greet and welcome guests as they arrive in the hotel. Being the fact that they are the ones that makes the first impression on any guest, Marriott wanted to make sure that they're training their employees, especially those in a bellhop position, to give the impression that they want to their guests. Now notice how they actually have a booklet, a reference point for everybody that's hired in this position. And it's very smart of them because as you would imagine, bellhops is probably not, you know, like we had said, one of those high-skilled workers, but they have such an impact on your customer satisfaction that Marriott takes the time to actually describe in detail what they expect from them. Now, what standard performance is, isn't something that can be assumed that everybody who works with you will just know and embody. Therefore, what's expected needs to be clearly discussed and usually is best between like an immediate supervisor and their direct reports so that there's no confusion and everybody knows exactly what standards they're being measured against and what they're aiming for so that they know how to meet the expectations of the job. In other words, this is what's meant when somebody says, at least to me, setting your employees up for success.
Mm-hmm.
All right, program number five is career progression. So you will find that your best employees often think, and I quote, I want to grow with the company. I want to get ahead. I am ready and willing to work harder, do more, study, and prepare myself for promotion. Now, if you have an employee like this that you've hired on board, this will only work in the long run if you actually have a plan and a path for your employee to progress through your company. So having this laid out and also communicated so that they understand that this is available to them is what will give your employee a positive attitude of your company and encourage good work as well as retention. All right, program number six is opinion surveys. Now, this is where you get to solicit feedback from your employees. It's also a great early warning system for you to know if there are any unfavorable attitudes that are building up among your culture. Sometimes people don't like to be confrontational. In fact, actually, oftentimes people don't like to be confrontational, especially employees. Like, so nobody wants to be the tattletale. Nobody wants to be the one that says, you know, bad things about people they work with or work for. So having kind of like these opinion surveys go out is a much softer and a quieter way to get honest and timely feedback from your employees. Now, the key here, too, isn't to just send out the surveys for the sake of sending out the surveys, which, honest to God, I have seen people do anyways, just because it sounds like a good idea and it looks good. The problem is the follow-up. So at Marriott, they made it a point so that every time they send out the surveys, after 2 weeks' time, they'll hold an all hands meeting to see if there's any more feedback that anybody else wants to contribute. Now, again, I think this is smart because this is a way of Marriott telling their people that, hey, we hear you. We're taking a look at this. We want to know more. Is there anything else you want to add? Then 4 weeks after that, they hold yet another all-hands meeting and announce what action will be taken based on the feedback on the surveys. So this is their way of proving to the employees that, you know, they're not here just to give lip service. They're showing employees that their opinions really matter, and that makes them feel heard and closer to the company. Program number 7, fair treatment. So at Marriott, not only do they give them employee handbooks of what's expected of the employees, they themselves also outline what the employees can expect of them, what they can expect of the company in terms of things like job security, promotion opportunities, disciplinary measures, or even step-by-step on how to address personal grievances. Now, oftentimes you do find this information in employee handbooks, but again, this is where Marriott shines a little bit more than others. While a lot of times people just kind of write these things up in handbooks and then leave it there as a, you know, a great point of reference should and when the need arises. But let's just be honest, most people don't pay much attention to them after signing them. But what they will remember, which is what Marriott does, is when action speaks louder than words. And they will remember the times where management actually goes to bat for an employee according to the guidelines of their handbook and carry out what was promised in these handbooks in real life. They show in action to these employees that they're all on the same team and that they work in a safe environment and not a toxic one. All right, last program is called profit sharing. So at Marriott, all the employees and managers are eligible to join their profit share plan after 3 years of service. And then 80% of those who are eligible actually do join. The employees contribute at least 5% of their earnings to the plan, and the company makes a distribution from profits that has, they say, in the past, more than equal the amount of employee contributions. Mm-hmm. Now, while I can't say that profit sharing is doable for all businesses, I do believe the point that's trying to be made here, which I agree with, is fair compensation. There has to be a balance, of course, between rewarding employees for their effort, especially those who go above and beyond, and fair market value and practical compensation. But in all honesty, you cannot expect to underplay an employee, especially a good employee, thinking that they'll stick around and continue to do a good job. Now, I'm not saying that employees will or should lower their own personal standards just because they feel underpaid. In fact, maybe this kind of circles back a little bit to what you were talking about, Savannah, about quiet quitting. Mm-hmm. We can have a few words about that later on.
Yep.
But what I am saying is that if an employee isn't making enough to make ends meet by working full-time for you or part-time for you, they may have to take on a second job because, look, that's just the reality of things. And that second job will affect the energy and time and attention that they can put on your job. So even if they try their best, even if they, you know, personally have a high level of standard for their work, if they're tired from working 2 to 3 jobs, they're just not going to be doing just as a good job for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that is the 8 programs that Marriott implemented. So just a quick recap. First one is individual development. Second one is management training. Third one is manpower training. Fourth one is the standards of performance. Fifth one is career progression. 6 is opinion surveys. 7 is fair treatment. And 8 is profit sharing. Now, when I was reading this article, I was like, well, this is great. This is actually a lot of stuff that I would even recommend we do today. And I've seen that's actually done before. Now, the thing that surprised me is after I got to the end of this article and I was kind of doing my own research and reading into it, this was actually written in 1975.
Dang, that's crazy.
It's 1975. My gosh. And it's still relevant now. Now, after I read this, this is why I'm like, okay, now I completely understand how Marriott is still around.
For sure.
Like, this is good stuff. And it's stuff that I guess it's like an oldie but goodie. It's a classic, classic truths. Just,
well, it's evergreen. Yeah, it's evergreen.
Yeah, it's evergreen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's evergreen. Amazing. And like I said, I mean, they have that kind of culture for their C-suite all the way down to the maintenance guy. And
they're doing it right.
Oh yeah, they are. And like my stepfather, he has been working for Marriott for a while and he really should be just, you know, fully retired, but he doesn't want to fully retire because he loves working for them so much. So
I love it.
Yeah. You know you're doing something right when people don't want to leave you.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when they can, right? When they have the mm-hmm. options to, and they can, and they still choose, they're willing to actually still be part of the team. That speaks a lot to like the Marriott brand. So
yep.
Anyways, like I said, the article will be in the show notes below, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Savannah.
All righty. Well, we all know good companies get better when they focus on their employees' satisfaction and happiness, much like Marriott. This is part of my company culture. What kind of environment do you provide for your employees and in turn to your clients to make them want to continue doing business with you? As I mentioned earlier, 2020 exposed a lot of people's unhappiness with their current positions, and in turn, a new buzzword was invented, quiet quitting. This is when an employee stops going out of their way or going above and beyond what they are required to do. So, how do you recapture the honeymoon phase with your employees so that they do go above and beyond with your clients and do provide timely, consistent, fantastic service and don't push you into quiet firing? In my experience, it's which is also
hopefully that's not going to be the new buzzword.
It is.
Oh, is it already a new buzzword?
Quiet firing, yes.
Oh.
It is, but like wow. To me, I feel like quiet firing is not how you should be reacting to quiet quitting.
I think that's a very reactive.
Oh, for sure. But you know, we're going to get into that later. In my experience, it starts with step one. It starts with the top. When onboarding an employee, it's important that they know and fully understand your company's vision, the mission, who you are, who they are to you, and what your company stands for. If everyone is aligned in the message, there's no confusion or unmet expectations. Honestly, we start our first interview with candidates by asking them what they think we do. If they don't know or they can't articulate it in a way that makes sense to us, we will reflect on how we're putting our own messages out and work on it and make it make better sense. The way we see it, if an average person with no touch from us can't tell us what we do, then how can we expect for our employees to get it straight out of the gate? Next, it starts with the owner and the C-suite executives. If they're not following the protocol and they don't stand behind the vision or message, neither will the employees. This isn't a position of, you know, I'm better than you, so I get to act a certain way that you don't get to get away with. This is where the quiet quitting is going to begin to unfold. Animosity will grow, resentment will fester, and a divide will begin to present itself. This us against them mentality creates that toxicity. You want to make sure that everyone from the top to the bottom gives and gets the same level of attention and respect. Your company isn't an autonomy or a dictatorship. It's very much a democracy. And as you stated with Marriott, I mean, they clearly run it like a democracy. Your company can't survive without employees. And in turn, employees can't survive without a company. Granted, you can always get new employees. Granted, they can always find another company to work for. But how often do you really want to go through step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Then again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Don't you want to just stop at 5 and just keep these people consistently for a long period of time? I know I would.
I think it's true on both sides, actually.
For sure. Like how many jobs? And plus, you don't want your resume to be full of all these 6-month to 1-year jobs. You don't want that either. So, or maybe
well, I hear that's kind of the trend these days.
That is
right?
The trend now, but I disagree with
now,
it.
12 to 24 months is the average of that's considered the norm, right? And I think like you bring up a good point, which we can discuss later of like, do we want that to be the norm? Because personally, if I was an employee, man, that is just tiring.
It is. Like, I don't know that I'm okay with that. Call me an old lady. I don't care. But it's just, I don't agree with it. But, you know, you're probably thinking that this hasn't happened to me yet. So why should I care? And I'm speaking to, you know, you as the owner or you plural owner. It probably has. And you haven't recognized it as a quality control issue. If you've experienced fraud, abuse, or errors in your finances, loss in clients, high turnover in employees, a slowdown in business, maybe there's not as much engagement with your employees, or everyone just kind of, you know, check marks the boxes and goes about their day, quality control could be an issue, as can the general neglect of your company's operations. So how do you create a connection between you, your C-suite, and your employees, regardless of the size of your business? First, you must define what quality means to your employees. Many companies successfully send polls or reviews to clients to measure how happy they are with the company. You can do the same with your employees. Design a method to capture how they feel about working for your company, what they see as weaknesses in their experience, and what they would like to see in the future of the company. This mirrors, again, what Marriott does. There should also be set processes, and those processes with the most complexity should be broken into steps. When you isolate methods, you control the output, thus control the experience. After receiving feedback from your employees, you'll know where to start and how to build a solid quality control plan. The basic elements of a quality control plan are research, planning, communication, and quality assurance, followed by continuous improvement that matches your company's growth. This is ongoing and essentially a living document, no different than your procedures manual. Keep on top of the changes in your company and the culture of the people you hire, and you'll always have an up-to-date QC plan that will make just about anybody want to be a part of your company. So, a lot of the things that I talked about are things that I actually do in my own company. We send out polls, we do reviews. I have a client relations manager that makes sure all of my clients are happy and also makes sure that everyone on my team is happy. Everybody's getting what they need and what they want. I'm up to my eyeballs and forms in the ways in which we, you know, we do a lot of forms internally, but that's how we also manage our QC. So I guess my question to you is, when do you think a company should start thinking about QC? Like, how big or how small should it be? A revenue measurement? Should it be based on amount of employees, clients? When do you think a business should start thinking about a plan?
I think that every business owner, essentially, if you're going to go into business, you probably want to have a plan, even if it is a simple one. Now, I think the complexity of that plan certainly revs up as you get more employees and more clients. But I think there's a lot to be said about being thoughtful and kind of separating yourself, like kind of what you do and what's implied as quality control and what you do into something that is separate from yourself. So you're preparing for the day that you can actually teach and implement quality controls into your operations. I think when you're a one person company, it's so easy to, you know, it's all one and the same, right? It's whatever you do is pretty much quality control. But then, you know, that's also a time where you also have the most, well, I say you have the most time, but I'm not sure, I guess, because if you're a one-person company, you're kind of just surviving anyways, right? So you're trying to get the work, you're trying to keep up the work, you're trying to make the clients happy and everything. Maybe that's not when you have the most time.
Yeah.
But at some point, your company has to plateau, or you just need to create more time for yourself, right? I know that's really hard. I've talked to a lot of companies where they're kind of a single-person firm, and they're, you know, beyond their eyeballs in client work and client deliverables, that they're so working in the business that they create no time to work out of the business. And they're kind of like, well, you know, unless I'm just going to give up sleep, I don't know how I'm going to do this. But the honest truth is that you have to carve out time. You don't carve out time to work on the business. Your business is never going to grow. It's never going to get bigger. And you'll forever just be treading water and surviving. Now, the problem, and I'm not sure if I wouldn't say this is always the problem, but usually the problem is that they either don't have their ideal clients and their clients aren't paying at a level that allows them to create the space they need to work on their business, right? Because as we all know, when we first start our business, we just want revenue. We don't really care where it comes from. It's just somewhere in the ballpark of what we're looking for, like in the terms of an ideal client, we will take, even if they're not ideal, because we just need the revenue to survive. And out of that desperation, I think you end up just attracting a lot of people who are maybe just a lot of problem childs who spend a lot of time taking up your time, right? But then not paying you for any of the time. So in essence, you're basically just working for pennies on a dollar for yourself. And that's why you can't carve out time to work on your business. So it's a really hard shift, but the idea is you have to make that shift if you want to get to the next level of your business. And part of that making that shift is doing this, putting in the plan for our QC, which means, I guess, to answer your question, Shivana, I think you should start ASAP as soon as possible. I mean, after probably a year in your business, you probably need to understand a little bit about what you're doing, what you intend to do, and, you know, what kind of people you want to hire and what kind of clients you ideally want to work with. But once you kind of have that straight, like, the QC needs to kick in right away. What do you think?
I kind of feel like when you're starting a business, you already have so many things that you really should have started before you start your business, or right at the same time when you start your business, that it can become so daunting that a person would just fall apart from the beginning.
Because, it is. Yeah. So if you think back now, knowing everything you knew, if you went back and told yourself who started the company in the beginning, I think you would like, at least for me, I think I would overwhelm the young me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If I were to say to myself, well, make sure, like, in this month that you, you know, get your business license and, you know, you get your website going, but you also have to have your business plan ready and start your standards of procedure and also create a quality control. I mean, like, I think I would have just malfunctioned at that moment and just crumpled up into a fetal position and just been like, I can't do this. So, you know, we have to take that into consideration. I think that a revenue measurement, employees and clients, maybe not so much clients, but more of a revenue measurement than employees, to me, should be your indicator of when quality control should be a consideration. I also feel that you should start planning your quality control and know that it's not a thing. It's not a project. It is a journey. But you should create the outline at a time that is slow for you. So if your industry, whether it be products or services, has a slow time, generally speaking, a slow month, of which I think you can start to measure within your first 5 years, 3 to 5 years. I think for a lot of companies, 3 to 5 years. If you can gauge what your slow month is, that should be the month that you and your manager or your partner or whoever else it is that's high level should start putting together a plan for quality control for the clients, but also for the employees. In the beginning, I think everybody is kind of like a first-time parent. You know, you don't know what, every time they cry, you feed them. Every time they cry, you change them. You don't know that there's such thing as a schedule and like you can force them into schedules, right? Like when you're a first time parent, you're like, I don't know, just shut this thing up. But it's the same with the business. You're like, I don't know. I'll do whatever it is you want. Just give me the money, you know? And exactly. Quality isn't just as you said, like quality doesn't become a factor in both, clients, customers, or employees. And you start to discover what you want and what you don't want in your first 3 to 5 years. However, I do understand that there might be some listeners, or there are definitely definitely businesses that try to build to sell at a very fast pace. They want to build to sell within the first 3 years. And I get that. So, but if that is your plan, if your intention is to build to sell within 3 years, then that quality control should be created. The SOP, the processes, and all of those things should be created from the very beginning. But if you're a basic business that has found themselves from maybe one location to three locations, or you are a company that has found yourself jumping from $1 million company to a $5 million company, then, you know, let's refer back to what I just said. Take your slow time, or maybe even take like 2 weeks off of work and write all this stuff down. But know that this is the beginning of the journey. It's not a destination.
So I think that like the stuff that we went through of how to, like this is stuff that you need in your company at some level, right? There's no avoidance of it. It's just a matter of when you implement it and when, you know, again, like the level of complexity you build into the plan, but all these elements are, you're going to need it. Uh-huh. So I agree with your point in the fact that, you know, when there are businesses out there who start out and they realize they want to build themselves to sell, right? Uh-huh. The difference is too, is some of them have the benefits of being well-funded, which in turn gives them the time, right? Yeah. When you're a business owner who's trying to grow your business organically and you want to try to sell in 3 years, oh, just know that you either got to have a lot of funding set aside for yourself to basically buy yourself that time, or you're going to run into that struggle I was telling about of how do I keep clients and deliverables and income coming in and carve out time to try to work on my business while I'm working in my business.
Absolutely.
That becomes a classic struggle that occurs if you're organically growing your business and you're not being funded. Like, you're not being funded in the sense of you don't have a loan, you don't have a private you don't have a private lender, you don't have somebody who's giving you enough money so that you don't have to desperately take on clients that may not be a fit and a time vampire for you to be able to work on your business. Right. So I think a great example of this is if you look at all the SaaS IT companies out there now, right? They all kind of have a formula when they start up. They have all the stuff together, right? So you go to a SaaS IT company and you look at their website. They already got their mission laid out. They got their vision. They have their employment, like culture laid out. They'll tell you what to expect of them. They'll tell you what they expect of you. Like, they have all this stuff laid out. But they can do that because they're being funded by millions of dollars.
Absolutely. You know? And one would expect really someone of that level. Yeah. And one would expect someone of that capacity or that level to have all of that written out. If you don't have it written out, then why would I want to invest in you? You need to have everything together.
Exactly. So I think that goes to say that, like I was saying, is that these are all things you, these are elements in your company that you can't shortcut to or not address. You'll have to address it at some point. It's just that you have to understand there is going to be a level of difficulty if you're not a well-funded company to do it all at once and you're trying to sell in 3 years.
That's right. That's right. Or even in 5 years, which tends to be 3 to 5 years tends to be the norm or, you know, the industry norm of when a person sells their company. But yeah, if you're planning on selling in 3 to 5 years, building and selling in 3 to 5 years, or even selling in 3 to 5 years, you do still need to start right now because, again, journey, what you write now is not going to look anything like it does in 3 years or anything what it looked like in 5 years, because things are going to change. Culture changes, industry changes, and the environment around you changes. Can I say that my quality control from 2019 is the same as 22? No,
no,
it's not, because the whole world changed and you need to be prepared for that. Oh, or otherwise you're going to end up with being in this vortex of, you know, employee turnovers, unhappy clients, and risk losing your business.
Yeah. And I think there's a happy medium too, to like what you were saying, right? Like, nobody's saying that you have to sit down and draw out the perfect plan today.
Sure.
Because, like Savannah, like you were saying, it changes over time. That's the thing about business. It changes all the time. And your business will change. I can tell you my vision of what my business will be on day one certainly was not the same on day 365. And it wasn't, you know, even on day 500, right? Sometimes it changes really quickly. So it'll change. The idea is the fact that at least you have somewhat of a plan drawn out. Like, it doesn't have to be colored in detail and everything like that, but there is some at least basic framework that you're approaching this with that you have, even if you are at the $200,000 level or the $300,000, $500,000, a million, because you'll always constantly be refining it and you'll keep adding details. So at some point, your company will get to a point where you're kind of like, okay, this is the vision. This is how I'm going to run it. I can see, and it's going to be the grow, and it's going to grow, and we can sustain this, like, business for a set of time without any major changes we don't expect. And that's when you can start really filling the details on what this plan is and kind of solidifying it. And, you know, this is the end all be all, like everybody gets shared and all that stuff with it. But that's far down the road. Nobody's saying that you have to do that today, because nobody can, to be quite honest.
No, no.
And you have to think about it.
Oh, for sure. Like, I guess my first touch with quality control was about 4 years into my company. And I would have I only had a few people working for me at that time. So we would do a once a month phone call where we would just talk. We would just talk about each other, our personal lives, but then we would also talk about what they were happy with, not happy with. I'd make notes and I'd make changes. That evolved as the company grew into a form that we would send out. Hey, fill out this form real quick. Are you happy? Are you not happy? What are you not happy with? What would you like to see changed? It was pretty short, like a 5 to 6 question survey, and make changes according to that. Then we got even bigger and we started having monthly meetings where we would all be on a Zoom call. And during the Zoom call, it would be, what are you happy with? What are you not happy with? Do you have any questions? You know, make us feel a little more like a team together where we could commune with one another, regardless of their position. And then it started to grow from there where I hired a relationship manager. And that relationship manager was dealing with the clients, dealing with the people who work for me. And we've got the quality control, a process created, written down, you know, like it just evolved. This procedures manual got bigger and bigger and bigger based on the feedback we were getting, the size of the company, the complexity of the position in and of itself, and the complexity of the clients, you know. So, and honestly, I'm going to get into the famous example now, but a lot of what I based my whole journey on is who my famous example is.
What a teaser.
Yeah. In saying that, we shall segue. In each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion. Would you like to use someone other than Marriott?
No, I think I fell in love with Marriott for this episode.
So you're good?
So I'm going to stick to my famous example as Marriott.
Okay, awesome. Well, I have always been fascinated by what I call the McDonald's method. How they are able to give every person the same experience over and over again. And it doesn't matter if they have high turnover, it's the nature of the type of business it is. Everyone knows how to do all of the things because the methodology is simple and multifaceted at the same time. The first time I ever became aware of the McDonald's method, or that there was this a thing, like that it was a thing, is when I worked as a barista. And as a barista, my store manager was kind of obsessed with this methodology himself. And he talked about how our locations, that if someone should be able to come and order a caramel latte from me and get the same exact experience and have it taste exactly the same as a caramel latte across town. Everything Absolutely. Should all, you know, like it should always be the same. This was at a time when Starbucks was still new. It was during the war of the Starbucks / Caribou / you know, like Bean, whatever the other one was,
and there
was
Coffee like Bean, I think it's called.
Like, there were so many different, like, you know, companies at the time that were fighting for franchisable, or maybe not even franchisable, but multi-location restaurant or coffee shops. So he was fascinated with this idea and this ideology, and it stuck with me. He was very influential in my concern or focus with everyone feeling the same level of special. So I found this great article on LinkedIn that we're going to share in the show notes on the history of how McDonald's was able to replicate quality, regardless of who was providing the output. And this was actually original McDonald's that created this, that Ray Kroc went on to build the empire off of. But, you know, right. It was still unbelievable. And it seems to go against what we're talking about here. But trust me, it has everything to do with employee quality and the control of it. So the way they standardized how the products are made ensured how all employees could easily understand, easily adapt, and quickly begin. I said it's fascinating to me, and it is. This methodology became an industry standard across the board, and one that all franchises and all multi-location companies began to emulate, and the one that I've been trying to emulate from the time that I started building my team. And the reason why I believe that this is a quality control of employees, is that part of having a quality team is ensuring that there is no confusion on how things are done. If someone feels confident in their ability to understand the directions, they're also going to be confident in how they perform. That confidence will be clear to the clients as well. And we're not just talking about service, we're talking about products, we're talking about salespeople, we're talking about all of the people that are involved in your company. If the directions are easy, it won't be hard for them to forget them.
I agree with you there. I mean, clearly McDonald's has done well for itself.
Yeah, not so bad. So,
you know, McDonald's, Marriott, maybe something to do with the companies that start with an M.
Yeah, maybe. With each episode, we'd like to share either books, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and want to learn more, you'll have a great place to start.
So when I kind of always just think back to when I was starting and what kind of what kind of information or tools I would appreciate as a young budding entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I would say is that, of course, I've read a lot of books. So these three books I'm going to recommend is kind of like the trifecta of books that really got me not only thinking about selling my business, but really got me thinking about the elements that's needed in a sellable business, right? And mm-hmm. As our listeners, if you've listened to our episodes and you heard me and Savannah kind of talk and go back and forth, we agree on a lot of things, right? Savannah wants to build her company as a legacy. I clearly sold mine, but we agree on a lot of things because whatever those elements are, they work for both types of company, whether you just want to have your company last for forever or you want to sell it. It's all the same elements, a lot of it. So the three books that I'm recommending is, of course, E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Oh, yeah.
The other book is called Built to Sell by John Warlow. And then the third book is called Work the System, The Simple Mechanics of Making More and Working Less by Sam Carpenter. Mm. So these three should build kind of like a good foundation if you're a big reader or even if you're an audiobook person, a good foundation to kind of understanding making repeatable businesses, right? Like repeatable and sustainable businesses. I think that's the better way to put it.
Yeah.
Whether it's the McDonald's method, whether or not it is the Marriott method, whatever the case may be, all of it kind of boils down to kind of the same universal formulas and truths.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would say is kind of to just, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The other thing I was going to end with is just to kind of address what we were talking about earlier about feeling overwhelmed, especially if you're just in a newish business, or maybe you're just in a part where you're super busy in your business, whether it's growing, maybe it's expanding, but as the owner, you find yourself not knowing how to fit any of this into whatever your day-to-day is at this point. I mean, I still stand by the fact that, look, as the owner, you got to do yourself a favor and carve out time to work on your business. Whether it is one day out of the entire quarter, I will say one day out of the year might be a little too small of an amount.
No, for sure,
least,
yeah.
Yeah, but at least one full day out of the quarter doing it, right? But the less time you have, which is ironic, the less time you have, I would say that the more you may want to seek out somebody to work with to get this done, right?
Yes.
So maybe join like a business accelerator group, join a business mastermind group, or, you know, have a mentor work with you or have somebody mm-hmm. working with you that can help you lead through it so you make the most out of your very limited time.
Yes,
because this is overwhelming if you're new to it. But I think, Savannah, as you might agree with this, as somebody who has gone through it and is still currently doing it, it gets easier because you've learned it, right? You're not like completely confused about all the different directions you can go into and all the stuff you need to do because somebody who's had experience is less overwhelming. And if you have somebody guide you like that you can make the most out of your time and you'll be able to kind of move ahead and get progress. Now, of course, the ironic part that I'm talking about is You hope that if you don't have time, you have money, right? Or if you don't have money, you have time, right? Typically, that's the conundrum most people fall into. So I'm assuming that if you don't have the time, you probably have the money because you're too busy trying to make the money.
Right.
And so put that money to good use. And if you don't have the money, then you probably have the time. So you probably want to put your time to good use and read the books, learn how to do it yourself if you don't have the money to spend on a professional who is willing to walk it through with you.
Mm-hmm. That's what I did. I invested what I could what little I could on hiring someone to be the relationship manager for my company so that I could, I did it in two parts. I hired a person who would be in charge of that quality control based on emotion and feelings and tangibility. But also I took the time. I have time on my calendar every day that no one's allowed to talk to me because that is when I focus on, you know, it is a blocked out time every day in which I spend time with myself, getting to know what is it, you know, that's when I am, okay, here are the things that I have noticed. I need to write this down in my procedures manual. I need to take this and change it in my processes or, you know, whatever it is. Also, you know, kind of having conversations with my own self where I'm like, what am I happy with? What am I not happy with? Because in the end, you know, you're so busy trying to make sure everybody else is happy. You yourself got to be happy too. You know, so if you're going to sell your business, right, you don't necessarily have to be happy about it, but you do need to make sure that, you know, it's not about like being happy about, woohoo, I'm selling my business, but it's more about like, you need to be satisfied as the owner, because if you're not satisfied, will the person, the next person be satisfied with this, you know, hellhole that you've created for yourself? No.
First of all, nobody's going to want to buy your hellhole unless for some reason the business is surviving despite you. But
no,
nobody's
going to
invest and buy a hellhole.
Right? Yeah.
Because if you think about it, it makes no sense, right? As soon as somebody looks at your profit and loss and realize, oh, great. So my net income comes out to be, I don't know, like $30,000 a year and the owner's not paying themselves anything. Oh, well, so I'm basically buying a business and a job. Like, why would I do that? Why would I spend money to go buy a business and a job? So it all kind of comes back in full circle about that. And it's funny you say that you don't necessarily have to be happy about selling.
Well, no.
And but that's true though.
Yeah, sorry. But it's not, it's the same with a inheritable company. You know, whether it's one of my children that inherit the company or it's a key person that inherits the company. In either case, I don't want to create a job and a business that they're going to be inheriting. It's not going to be, I want them to have the ability to enjoy it. I want it to be attractive to them. But while I'm, but during the time that I'm still here, it needs to still be attractive to me. Because if I stop being satisfied with my job, it will show. You'll feel it. And then that starts the downfall. It is all a butterfly effect. So
it is. It's all interrelated, right? We were just talking about the QC for the employees, QC for the client. It's all of that's the thing about business is that I think that's difficult. That's the challenge about business is that once you realize it, it's all interrelated. So you may not want to deal with all the pieces at once, but you'll soon find out that if you ignore a part of it, something else is going to get impacted, right? Because it's all dependent on one another. So I guess our advice here is stop being frantic. Stop running around with your hair on fire and your pants on fire, right?
Yeah.
I find it very hard to, I find it very hard, or at least I haven't seen as much. Now, again, there are businesses that survive despite their owners. Solana, you and I have seen these businesses.
It is unbelievable all the time. What happens. It's weird.
And it is unbelievable. And there are businesses like those, right? But majority of it is most businesses aren't growing and scaling and expanding with a frantic leader at its helm.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times
running around trying to catch fire.
Yeah. But a lot of times it'll be a frantic leader. Plus, they have a super strong manager or super strong CFO or, you know, somebody else that's really strong. So it's just, you know, yes and no. We have seen companies excel despite themselves, but it's also because somebody else is the person that is holding the whole thing together. So, you know, it's not fair enough.
But if you don't have that person and it's just you, let's say you even have employees, but maybe you don't have that very strong manager in that sense, right? If it's just you, going back to what you were saying, Savannah, about carving out time to work on the business, I did the same thing. I made it a point to always carve out time every Sunday between the hours of 9 a.m. and 1 p.m., where that is my time to reflect on everything that happened the week before, how my business is going, where I wanted to go, is it going the direction I want to go, what worked, what didn't work, all that stuff. I did it once a week, right? So if you don't, you know, have the discipline to do that for yourself, if not, find somebody who's willing to do it with you once a quarter, just to make the most out of your time. But the thing is, it has to be done. Somebody has to be working on the business. The whole company cannot be working in it.
Absolutely. Well, so for me, there are a ton of books about quality control and quality assurance, which we didn't get into today, but I thought it would be best to leave links in our show notes so you can decide which book is best for you. So both of the links are lists of books, and there's also reviews of those books so you can find the one that fits what your need is. Also, there are great platforms you can use to measure quality. I'll name a few that I use, and you know, you guys do with it what you will. I actually really love HubSpot. I love the ability of HubSpot, all of the different bells and whistles of HubSpot and its usability. I also really love Process Street, and I've mentioned Process Street multiple times on here. I really do like how simple it is. It's very simple with their checklists and their automations, their workflows. And then I also recently discovered a beta form of Google Tables, which Google Tables, I don't know when it's going to come out of beta form, but I personally really like it because it's essentially Google Sheets with automations, with complexity. Airtables, it's almost like Airtables, but because it's a Google product, I like how I can integrate it with my other Google products. And then also we have a very simple spreadsheet that we use for quality control. And this spreadsheet is a Google spreadsheet. It's shared with the client, and it's a checklist. Really simple checklist, and everyone fills it out. The client has access to it, and there is a checklist part for the client as well. In our case, we are service-based, and a lot of the quality work that we provide is based on what the client provides to us. That's just the kind of industry that we're in. If the client doesn't give us everything we need, we can't provide to them everything that they need. So this checklist kind of shows to both of us who's stepping up. So we do a lot of Zoom meetings. So all of our Zoom meetings are recorded and shared with the client. We also do transcriptions of the meetings. Those are shared with the client. And that is part of our measurement of quality control and of communication control. So those are some of the things that we do. Obviously, you do what it is that works for you. I know that not everybody that listens to us is in a service industry. You also have products that you sell and where you sell them and how you sell them, whether it's online or in a brick and mortar. But there are still levels of quality that you have to measure, and especially with your employees, because, hey, you can't be on top of them all of the time. And I don't think they would want that anyway. So
nobody likes a micromanager.
Nope, not at all. And this is a wonderful segue to joining us for our next episode, where we're going to discuss work-life balance versus work-life integration, blending work responsibilities and personal responsibilities. The suspense. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. And until next time, mind your business behind your small business.